Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. One of the top duties for state lawmakers in the year after a national census is to redraw congressional and legislative districts to account for changes in population. This is almost always a fraught and contentious process, and one that has been especially hard-fought in North Carolina, where maps drawn by Republican lawmakers in recent years have repeatedly been struck down as illegal gerrymanders. This year, a new wrinkle has been thrown into the process by the fact that census results won't be available until September. Recently, I got a chance to learn more about this development and to catch up on other front-burner issues in the world of voting and voting rights with one of our state's best-informed advocates, Attorney Tomas Lopez of the group Democracy North Carolina. Well, our old friend Tomas Lopez, welcome back to News and Views. It sure is good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Lots going on in the democracy battles these days. One issue that sort of quickly has come to the top of the list is this is a redistricting year, of course, 2021. The fights over redistricting always are interesting and something we'll always have, I suppose. And it's gotten even another wrinkle thrown into it this year with the fact that because of all the controversies over the census and the Biden administration coming in and trying to clean up some messes left over from the Trump years, that it looks like some of the data that we would ordinarily get from the census and that would guide us in the redistricting process looks like it'll be delayed for several months. Talk to us about what's going on with redistricting, how this might play a role, what we might be looking forward to in North Carolina.
One thing to know right at the outset is that we've been talking a lot about redistricting for the last few years, new maps coming out every year seemingly, but this process that we're slated to go through this year is the process that is mandated in the United States and North Carolina constitutions. Right? This is actually the scheduled redistricting, what people call the decennial or every 10-year redistricting process. And in order for it to happen, the state has to receive data from the Census Bureau. Right? This is the sort of core function of the census. Take count of who's living in the United States and apportion, and then we've got to make these apportionments for legislative purposes. Obviously, there are many other uses for the census that are really critical, but redistricting and the census are inextricably linked. What's happened is that in a typical redistricting cycle, like in 2011, this data would get to the states in the spring, as early as the end of March. And what has happened is that the Census Bureau has come out and has said, look, it's going to come later. And actually, they came out and said, well, it's actually going to come later. And most recently, they said that they expect for census data to get to the states on or after September 30th. What that means is that we are going to have a redistricting process. And in North Carolina, what that means is that the General Assembly will draw the lines and be the ultimate approver of those lines, right? There's no role for the governor in this. We don't have any kind of independent or quasi-independent commission. All of that, is really going to happen in the fall. Now, there may be ways in which leaders may try to sort of do some things in advance, but that's an open question. But what we know is that this is all going to be happening. The decision-making process is going to happen far later than normally would. And that is concerning in a couple of ways. One is that we often count on and really want to have meaningful public comment in the redistricting process. We're going to have less time to do that. And another concern is, as we've seen over the last 10 years, redistricting is a very contentious issue that ends up in the courts. So we could end up having redistricting maps in court again, and the courts have less time to act. And the third, and you folks may have seen headlines about this, there are implications both for this year's municipal elections and the timing of particularly the primary elections for next year's legislative and congressional elections.
One thing that we do know, I guess there's a lot of uncertainties, but it doesn't seem that there's really any indication that the long hoped for move toward an independent redistricting commission process in which the legislature would surrender the power that they currently have, or at least that the Republican majority has, no indication that that's going to happen this year.
I can't say that I expect it to happen this year. I mean, there are certain changes that would require changing the state constitution. So certainly those things wouldn't happen this year. If you're watching the redistricting process, I mean, one thing that I expect to see, though, is reform legislation at least put forward again to say, look, we can still make some change, and we can still even make the really big changes, even if we can't make the constitutional changes to state law. And so we may at least see those efforts put forward, but again, it will be uphill to see those happen.
Speaking of reform in the world of elections, there's an effort underway in Washington. There'll probably be efforts going underway in Raleigh as well, but there's a very high-profile effort underway in Washington this year with a new Congress, that very first bill introduced in both the House and the Senate, H.R. 1 and S.1, known as the For the People Act, that would include a lot of very important reforms that I know Democracy North Carolina would probably be supportive of. Can you talk to us about that legislation?
Sure. H.R. 1 and S.1, as you described, is a comprehensive democracy reform legislation. And it uses congressional power over federal elections to put certain really important reforms in place. So there are reforms there that would make voter registration more accessible, that would address some of the issues that we have around felony disenfranchisement, that would put in place independent redistricting commissions for the next redistricting cycle, and, you know, more from there, right? It is the kind of most significant package of reforms put together on, you know, voting access, campaign finance, democracy issues that we've seen in some time, certainly in the modern era. This is something that passed the House during the last session. I think folks are very optimistic that it would pass the House again. You know, the question for what the process will look like is what would happen to it in the Senate. You obviously have a very closely dividing United States Senate, and it's possible that the For the People Act could end up intersecting with questions about Senate rules and the future of the filibuster in particular. And so that's something to watch for in the coming weeks and months. To what extent does this issue emerge as something where people want to see action? We are certainly pushing people to pay attention to H.R. 1 and also to H.R. 4, which is the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. It's a revision to the Voting Rights Act, which you may recall was significantly set back in 2013 by a Supreme Court case that took away the ability of federal regulators to put a check on voting laws in certain places, including much of North Carolina, before they went into effect.
We're talking with one of the most important civil and voting rights advocates in North Carolina, Tomas Lopez, who's the executive director of Democracy North Carolina. Tomas, we've talked about federal legislation. What about what's going to be happening here in North Carolina, where the General Assembly retains so much control over voting laws? We had a raft of improvements to voting in 2020 that led to this enormous turnout, both on both sides of the political ledger. We had a lot of things that made it easier to vote during the pandemic. What's going to happen to those kinds of laws? Are they going to go away? Are we going to keep that stuff around in the future? What's your expectation and hope there?
So last year, the General Assembly passed and the governor signed legislation that put in place some changes to North Carolina's election laws in light of the pandemic, right? In light of this is not a state where prior to 2020, many people, for instance, used mail voting in large numbers, which is a contrast to some other states around the country. But there was a recognition that the election was going to be different, whether the rules were different or not, that voting behavior was going to be different, whether the rules changed or not. And, you know, our elected leaders, again, you know, our General Assembly did a good job of putting certain things into place that move the ball forward in terms of voting access. One would be lowering the absentee ballot witness requirement from two people to one. I want to illustrate the impact of that with a little bit of data. In our 2020 primary, with a two witness requirement in place, 86% of submitted absentee ballots were counted. That meant that 14% of those submitted ballots were not counted.
Wow.
If you were to extrapolate that figure to how many million ballots we had by mail in the fall, you would have had over 100,000 uncounted absentee ballots, which would have been, I think, a real problem for those voters. With a single witness requirement, you had absentee ballot acceptance rates closer to 98%. That's a really significant difference in terms of who was able to get their ballot counted. In an election that we saw remained secure. And so we look at that. We look at the absentee ballot request portal that was allowed to be put online. We look at rules that were put in place that made it more flexible in terms of where you could live and be a poll worker, right? You didn't have to live in your own precinct to be a poll worker there. That's something to help prevent a poll worker shortage, which is something we saw in the primaries last year. We look at these things, we see that they work. We see that we had record turnout, and we had a secure election in North Carolina. And we're asking the question, why not make these things permanent? Why not see what works and keep it in place? And so that's one piece of what we are, you know, what we're hoping to see this year. Obviously, election access issues continue to be really contentious, but our hope would be that this is something, given that last year this was something that was passed and put in place by the General Assembly, that, you know, we can see these things made permanent.
We're coming near the end of our time with Tomas Lopez, the Executive Director of Democracy North Carolina. But I want to ask you, Tomas, about the more general question of faith in elections. You know, we've just gone through this extraordinary period in American history just a few weeks ago in which we literally had an insurrection, and we have a huge proportion of people who supported, for instance, the former president, who cast doubts upon the legitimacy of the election. And yet at the same time, we had record turnout here in North Carolina from Trump supporters. We have no indication that the election wasn't run in one of the most secure, that indeed it wasn't one of the most secure elections in American history. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, this dichotomy here that's going on in our politics, where we are and where we go from here.
So I want to zoom up, right, like a little pan back out to this like 10,000, 50,000 foot level. We're just talking about absentee voting rules and poll worker stuff, and like get to this like big idea, right, is can you trust elections? Can you trust politics? And when you talk about sort of the election question in particular, what I'm grappling with is a really tricky paradox where, you know, what we saw in the Capitol on January 6th was animated by this idea that the election was stolen. And what we've seen over and over again is that simply has not borne out as a matter of fact. But people believe it, that they don't have faith, they don't trust the process. But what we also have are people who look at the political system and say, hey, I go out and vote, I do my thing, and the system is not working for me, right? So that when we talk about democracy not working, right, we're talking about something where the broader machinations of representative government are not functioning the way they should be. You know, organization works, especially with members of the Black community, of the Latinx community, people who cross the state who have been both directly targeted by voter suppression, but have also felt more generally, even if I do have good voting access, I'm not clear that it's worth it. There is significant work to be done to build trust not only in elections, but in the idea that elections are actually worth our time and that representative government is something that can work for people. And I actually think, you know, the optimist in me looks at all this talk about how bad people feel about elections and government more generally and holds it up against the fact that we had dramatically high turnout last year. People don't trust elections, and yet they participated in an election in really high numbers. I don't have an answer for you right now about what completely to make of that, but I think that's something to work with and to think about.
Well, we're glad that Democracy North Carolina is working on that and thinking about it and helping to lead us to a better place. Folks can check out your organization at democracync.org, right?
You got it.
All right. Well, check them out, folks. Volunteer and help them out. Make contributions. Tomas, we'll do this again real soon. Thanks for your good work.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Coming up next, one of North Carolina's newest members of Congress joins us to discuss her extraordinary first 2 months in office. Don't go away.